where Trumbull comes for news and talk. The Lisa Wexler Show, now on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
And welcome back to the show. I saw 203-333-9422. I saw a viral post kind of a thing that was so astonishing to me that in advance of our hearing from Dr. Janet Lefkowitz in just a moment, I want to share this with you and with the doctor. A gal named Sabrina Fonfader decided to tweet something that was inspired by the news and an old ex-boyfriend. And this is what she said. She said, "I tweet this every time men decide it's time to make decisions about women's bodies." This is her tweet. "But my ex-boyfriend thought all women got their period on the 15th of the month. He was 26 at the time." So she started that tweet, and that tweet led to a lot of other tweets with 19,000 retweets and 196,000 likes. Among some of the comments were these. One woman said, "My ex thought we could just start our periods whenever we wanted. He asked if I could schedule it around his birthday once." Here's another one. "My ex-husband, while I was pregnant with his child, believed the baby was in my literal stomach and that when I ate food, it fell on top of the baby." One woman said, "I once dated a 23-year-old who was furious that I mentioned drinking wine while on my period. He assumed it was dangerous because periods are related to pregnancy. I was like, sir, I'm the opposite of pregnant right now." Then there was this one from someone who was an aspiring doctor. Quote, "I had an ex that told me women shouldn't complain about their periods because they are clearly getting pleasure from their tampons. He was pre-med." I was reading these tweets and I thought to myself, maybe we need to take a step back. Currently, 21 states have no sex education requirement at all. And as we are talking about potentially reversing Roe v. Wade, we're also in general having a conversation about women's health and the education around sexuality and what happens when there are unintended pregnancies. Joining us now is Dr. Janet Lefkowitz. She knows a little bit about what happens between women and their health, in that she is the most intimate doctor a doctor can be, an OBGYN, present from start to finish at pregnancies and there for the very difficult moments and very beautiful and joyful moments in women's lives. Dr. Lefkowitz teaches at Brown University. She actually did her residency here in Connecticut, so she's been in Connecticut for an extended period of time. She's practiced up and down the Eastern Seaboard, including in Atlanta, and is very, very accomplished in her field. Dr. Janet Lefkowitz, thank you for joining us on the Lisa Wexler Show today. Hello.
Hello, and Lisa, thank you so much for this opportunity, and it's so nice to meet you and have this time together.
So, Dr. Lefkowitz, I was reading those tweets. Were they a surprise? Were they a surprise to you in your world that people are so ignorant of the basic biology of women?
Oh no, unfortunately no. And please call me Janet. During residency, during medical school, I was rotating through the OBGYN rotation as we do. And I met this young woman who was pregnant. She was a teenager, and she was coming in, and she said, so I need to use the restroom, but as I get bigger, can you tell me how I'm going to be able to use to pee when I go to the bathroom? And I said, well, what do you mean? She says, well, the baby's going to get bigger, and isn't it going to block where I need to go to the bathroom? And it took me a minute, and then I realized, oh, she doesn't realize that there's actually separate holes and separate places right. that things come out of.
Right.
And it was just a moment of realization that basic anatomy is not understood by people who actually have the anatomy. And it was a moment of opportunity for me to teach. And she was very thankful because she was very scared. And I think that so much of people's anxiety and fear comes from the simple fact of not knowing. And I think that when we make these assumptions that people know about these things, that's doing everybody a disservice. And I think that's part of why some of these myths are able to take on a life of their own, and why in some ways we've gotten to this place where we can't talk about things without stigmatizing things. And I know that from my experience of living in Atlanta with two children in the public school system, they taught abstinence-based sex ed. And for me, as an OBGYN, this didn't make any sense, because it's not a matter of don't ask, don't tell. It's a matter of let's teach and then educate so that people can be informed when they're faced with outside influences.
So let me ask you something. Yeah. We're chatting with Dr. Janet Lefkowitz at 203-333-9422. Janet, would you mind giving us a basic overview right now of what is available to men and women in the way of birth control?
Sure. There are so many options, and it is really important to know that there is not a one-size-fits-all for contraception when it comes to avoiding unplanned pregnancy and unintended pregnancy. People who have uteruses, we can look towards barrier methods, which are things like condoms, both female and male, but female condoms are not necessarily as effective. Barrier methods like diaphragms. We have rings and that are inserted into the vagina. We have IUDs that go into the uterus. We have pills. We have injections. We have implants that go into the arm, as well as the pills that I think most Americans are more familiar with. And then for people who have sperm, we have condoms. And
we don't say men and women anymore, Janet.
We can say men and women, but some people are trying to be sensitive about pronouns and people identifying as what their biological anatomy is. So I've become more sensitive to using gender non-identifying language. But men and women, for the purpose of this conversation, if you'd like to use that, I hope.
Well, I mean, I would prefer to use men and women, but also say, and also including others who may identify as something other than men and women, just for the sake of simplicity.
Absolutely.
For the sake of being cruel to anybody, just for the sake of simplicity.
Fair enough. So, condoms are really, unfortunately, right now, the only thing that I am aware of that is able to be employed by men. But for women, there is a whole range of things, ranging from barrier methods to the more effective against preventing unintended pregnancy, which are things that require coming in to a health provider's office and placing. So like an IUD, an intrauterine device, or an implanted device that goes typically into your upper extremity, into the arm, and then also an injection. And these things last longer, and it's sort of a set it and forget it situation, but by that in that way, they're much more effective.
So women have a lot of choices. And men still have a condom, and a lot of times men don't want to wear condoms, or they make women feel like they shouldn't wear condoms. There's still that conversation between men and women or partners that has to do with a condom not feeling comfortable and women feeling guilty if they ask their partner, who's a male, to wear a condom. That's a very real thing, Janet.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that that's part of the conversation that myself and colleagues, I think, are starting to have more of an awareness about, that we have to kind of meet our patients where they are to have the conversation, because it isn't always easy for somebody to say, hey, I get that you don't want to wear the condom, but you're not having sex if we're not doing that, if you won't wear the condom. And that can be very difficult for people to say. So really talking to our patients about being empowered to make that choice and to have that ability to say, no, thank you, this matters to me too much. And I think I'd like to think that we're getting somewhere with that, but I really can't say. I do know that I personally have that conversation with patients more than I previously have.
We're chatting with Dr. Janet Lefkowitz, OBGYN. Janet, can you tell us what is medication-assisted abortion, which we're hearing about a lot, but maybe many of us don't really understand it, and what at what time of pregnancy can it be used safely and effectively?
Oh, sure. And I just want to make sure that we're having this conversation in the context of the of what's going on right now. We had a leak of a SCOTUS of the Supreme Court ruling that may that people are very nervous about, which could impact how we access abortion care in our country. But this draft is not final, and I really want to impress that abortion remains legal in all 50 states right now. And if this court issues similar decision to this draft version, it's likely that 26 states are certain or likely to ban abortion. So this is very important when we talk about what options are available to people. And for just the overview, is abortion can be managed by either a surgical procedure or medication. And because 90% of U.S. counties lack a clinic that offers abortions, I think we're going to see more medication abortions, which right now probably accounts for, I think the last number I saw was about 54% of all abortions in the United States. And medication is essentially 5 pills in total.
Okay.
And it's been 20 plus years approved. It's been FDA approved, and it is up to 98% effective up to 77 days or 11 weeks of pregnancy. And
so 11 weeks is after that, after you think you might be 11 weeks from conception, you would not take the pill. Are the pills prescription?
So yes. What you need to do is get the first medication is a medication called mifepristone, and this is the pill that will stop the pregnancy from growing.
Okay.
And there's and that is given in it depends on how you are given it, and in some places that you can only go into a clinic for it, but they are this is where there are telehealth options in some places, but medication essentially needs to be given by somebody who can give you this particular pill and then prescribe the second set of medicines, which are 4 pills, which is taken either immediately after or up to 48 hours after the first pill. And those are the pills that will allow for the pregnancy to leave the body.
And when that happens, does the patient mm-hmm. have to then go to the doctor and have a D&C, a cleaning out of any kind? Is a procedure after that indicated?
Oh, no. This is what we are calling, we are referring to this as self-managed abortion. Medication abortion is safe and effective. Research has shown that people can safely manage their own abortions with pills, but they have to have the information and support they need. So with the safe and effective ways that a person can self-manage, the greatest risks are legal. So it wouldn't require, and because it's so effective, up to 98% effective, there shouldn't be a need to have any surgical procedure. Now, we always counsel patients that say there is a possibility that the procedure will not be complete or that it has failed, and that would require a surgical procedure. But many people choose to self-manage an abortion with medication because of the restrictions and barriers that make clinical care inaccessible. So, and for others, self-managing abortion is an affirmative choice and personal preference. But
Janet,
Lisa,
can you just stay right there? We're going to have to go to a commercial. Will you stay with us? We've got a caller, and we've got more questions for you. We're chatting with Dr. Janet Lefkowitz, OBGYN. We're answering questions and giving information about abortion and other procedures and general reproductive health and choices. We'll be right back.
Listen to Lisa on your smart speaker. Enable our Alexa skill and never miss a moment of the Lisa Wexler Show. Only on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Welcome back to the show. Love that song from Fame, no less. Dr. Janet Lefkowitz rejoins us now. She's an obstetrician and gynecologist, a teacher at Brown University with a very extraordinary resume of accomplishments and academic achievements. Thank you so much, Dr. Lefkowitz, for being with us. We've got a comment or a caller. Will from Long Island, you're on the air with Dr. Janet Lefkowitz. Hello.
Hi, Dr. Lefkowitz. I almost feel bad even making this call since, you know, I'm a man. But I have to start by, number one, saying that, you know, Dr. Lefkowitz said at one point, I'm going to continue a little bit, but it said at one point that, you know, I don't know why we can't have these conversations without stigmatizing people. But that's literally how this segment opened. We used four anecdotal pieces of evidence of statements made by, in some context that we don't know, by four dummies, obviously, that have absolute, I mean, I could only imagine if that's the way they think about, you know, women's reproduction or women's, you know, menstruation or anything, then obviously they may not be all there, okay? There's a lot of stupid people on this planet, right? There's got to be 100 million plus men on this planet, and those are the statements we open up with, thinking that men shouldn't have an opinion on whether abortion should be legal or not. Or the
wait, Will, I think you're jumping. Hold on. I think you're jumping. I never said, neither did Dr. Lefkowitz, that men shouldn't have an opinion about abortion. We haven't even gotten to an opinion about abortion. I was talking about basic sex education, basic education of biology. Let me finish. I gave some anecdotes from the web. And Dr. Lefkowitz gave one from her actual life of a woman who didn't know about her body. Not a man. A woman. A young girl.
I heard that one. Right. And which is also obvious, you know, that happens too, okay? Then we're also conflating, like, we're bringing up the Supreme Court here, but we're not bringing up what the Supreme Court is really doing. Are they just returning the rights of the states to make that decision? I also think you're having pushback from a lot of these states, because states like the one I live in went way beyond the example of the Supreme Court that, you know, within the first trimester an abortion is, you know, a right. And then after that, we're pushing for abortion on demand up until the day the baby's born in some of these states. So, you know, and as a man, right, you know, you're going to tell us, okay, and the argument that it's my body, my choice. There's lots of things that we legislate in this country that you can't do with your own body as a man or a woman. And on top of that, you know, am I given the choice if I didn't want to have the baby that after the baby you have it, do I have to not pay for it now? You know, it's not really an offer and acceptance deal when if I didn't want you to have the baby, you have the baby anyway, and then I'm guaranteed to have to pay at that point.
Thank you, Will. Thank you for your comment. Thank you for your comment. Dr. Janet Lefkowitz, would you like to respond?
I think that abortion care is a very complicated issue for people who and I think that men who are wanting to make gender equality, that there hasn't been a consistent, sustained male pro-choice effort. And I hope that we are able to, right now, we need to see it. We need to see people to see men supporting people to be able to and supporting women to make their bodies. Everybody should have bodily autonomy, but this is really about protecting essential health care. And I did not become a doctor to become political, and yet here I am. And that being said, I think that when something's important, we have to speak up, and this is men included, have to realize they have to vote for the people who are going to represent their views. And I can't speak to Long Island, but growing up in Connecticut and still being connected with Connecticut and having trained in Connecticut, I know, you know, I had the opportunity to be at a rally with Ned Lamont, or the governor, and Richard and Matt Blumenthal, and, you know, and Jim Hines. And there are also William Tong and Chris Murphy. There are politicians who are there supporting this work. And there are people coming in, Eric Russell, who's running for treasurer. There are people who are supporting this movement. And Stephanie Thomas, I believe, was just got party endorsement for Secretary of State. This is how the voting is what is going to matter. So, you know, when somebody like William has a need or an opinion, he has to get out there and vote as we all do. And for right now,
Dr. Lefkowitz, let me ask you something. As an OBGYN, why is it important to you that women retain the right to have a legal and safe abortion? Why?
Because abortion is essential health care. The people who are going to be most impacted by these changes are going to be people of color, people who are struggling financially, residents in rural communities, immigrants, trans, non-binary, gender expansive people, and they disproportionately face the risk of criminalization for the outcome of their pregnancy. And being a person who wants to promote self-awareness and health awareness and the right to be in control of their health and their sexual and reproductive health, this is critical to keep this access to health care that they want and need, to people, the health care that people want and need. And so I want to be able to ensure that people who want to get an abortion at a clinic or a doctor's office can do so without restrictions or barriers. But it also means information and resources about the self-managed abortion that we just spoke about. No matter what path a person chooses, no one should be criminalized for abortion care. And if people want to go to the clinic or want to use pills, that is the way it should be. And I, as a healthcare provider, as a physician, as an OBGYN, I need to do what I can. And so being an abortion provider and also doing is part of my full-scale practice. And times have changed. There are safe and legal, safe and effective options that are still legal to end a pregnancy that didn't exist 40 years ago, including this FDA-approved medication. So millions of people are using medication safely. Millions of people are using surgical procedures to end pregnancies. And the World Health Organization supports that pregnant people can safely conduct abortion care with medication. But the biggest and the biggest barriers remain political and legal. And so,
Janet, we've got another caller quickly before we have to close. We'll take one more. Sure. Matt from Derby. Hello, Matt. Welcome.
Yes, thank you. I'm just in this whole conversation. I never hear you once talk about the life and the baby in the womb. You just keep telling me how you're a provider for abortion and choice. What about the child's life?
Thank you, Matt. Thank you. Go ahead, Janet.
Thank you, Matt. Myself, as well as people who provide abortions, are looking at a pregnancy as a potential life, but it is the life of the woman who comes for the care that we are respecting. And our first priority as healthcare providers, as a doctor, my first priority is that a person can get the timely and compassionate care they need. And this will always include abortion care. So abortion will always be a key part of the comprehensive health care people need. And they need to be able to control if and when to be a parent and to care for the children they already have and to plan for those children's futures as a parent.
Janet, now, I have a question for you. I have a question for you. Is there a point at which you, as an OBGYN, would say, in terms of the developing life, that you will not abort on demand? You would only abort if there was a medical necessity to save a life of a mother, for example, or something where imminently the fetus was going to become stillborn or could not survive outside the womb. Do you have your own sort of rule of thumb about this?
Well, I think using a gestational age as a cutoff is harmful to any point in pregnancy. As far as my own feelings, I am trained to a certain point in pregnancy, and I am looking to train to a different point in pregnancy because it is the procedures change and the technique changes, and I need to be, and people need to be aware that these are not decisions that are made. It's a case by case thing, and I think putting a gestational age as a cutoff is not something that is helpful for keeping access to care a priority. Okay. I think that people choose to have terminations at different have abortions at different points in pregnancy for various reasons, and I think that it is not a conversation is not about necessarily when for a patient, but why, and is there a person who is able to assist them in that process? And that is what's critical, is keeping keeping resources and support for people so that they can get the care they need at whatever point in their pregnancy is appropriate.
Thank you very much. Dr. Janet Lefkowitz, thank you very much for coming on the show today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And this is a conversation that I'm so glad that you are supporting. And thank you to the callers for bringing in their voices. But please know that bans on abortion are going to just lead people to find bans on abortion do not stop abortions. They just make it less safe. And
thank
I
you
hope
very
that
much.
People understand. Yeah.
Thank you, Janet.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more of the Lisa Wexler Show in the next hour.